Against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Open the door. Seek new world. In here, Security 90.3 FM from Montreal.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Hello everybody, we'll be starting in a few minutes. Thank you all for joining us. I just want to give a big, big welcome to all of our panelists and to all of you at home for joining us, for tuning in. We have what's sure to be a superb event ahead of us. I've been really, really looking forward to this. And I'm just totally delighted to be hosting this critical discussion with our esteemed guests, Zahia Al-Masri, Libby Davies, Sven Robinson, Hamam Farah, and Rabbi David Miviser. So my name is Bianca Majeni. I'm with the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, and we're the organizers of today's event. I want to offer our deep thanks to our co-sponsoring organizations, Independent Jewish Voices, the Courage Coalition, Just Peace Advocates, Palestine House, Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. I also want to thank our media sponsor, Rabble.ca. Before we begin our event tonight, I just want to acknowledge that I'm speaking to you from Montreal, from Jojage, which is a place, which is the traditional territory of the Ganyangahaga people. And it's a place that's long served as a site of meeting and exchange among many First Nations. It's really incredible to see this turnout. There's hundreds of you who've tuned in to the Zoom event. We're gonna basically, the way that our event is gonna work today is that speakers are gonna give their opening remarks, and then we're gonna be opening this up to questions from the audience. And we'll try to get to as many as we can. My name is Bianca Bajeni, and I'm here representing the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, which is an organization that challenges unjust foreign policy measures and aims to bridge the gap between the perception and reality of Canada's role in the world. And we also work to oppose the racism that's embedded in Canadian foreign policy. You can find out more about the work that we do at foreignpolicy.ca. So a bit of history, our organization started off, basically launched around a campaign to oppose Canada's bid for a seat on the UN Security Council. And one of the major focuses of this campaign was Canada's anti-Palestinian policies. For me, a decade ago, during a trip to the World Education Forum, I personally saw firsthand the immense separation wall, the segregated roads in the West Bank. I witnessed checkpoints with their parapets and machine guns, and I talked to communities whose olive trees had been uprooted and homes razed by the Israeli army. And it's just so clear that international solidarity matters. Canadian policies matter. And our government has sided with Israel repeatedly on almost every matter of importance. For starters, the Trudeau government has a trade agreement with Israel that treats occupied West Bank settlements as part of Israel. Just last year, the government sent a letter to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, demanding that it not investigate Israel's war crimes. The Canadian government has voted against more than 50 resolutions upholding Palestinian rights. And these are resolutions that are supported by almost every nation on earth. So millions of dollars in donations are subsidized by taxpayers in Canada for Israeli charities. And some of these support groups that are backing the Israeli military, West Bank settlements, and even explicitly racist organizations. So a major way that we living in Canada can contribute to the Palestinian struggle is to actually challenge our own government, is to challenge the Trudeau government and their policies towards Palestine. And at the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, we believe that it's really important to take advantage of different political moments to advance progressive foreign policy. The Security Council campaign offered one opportunity to highlight the Trudeau government's anti-Palestinian policies in a moment that had real consequences. And the NDP convention offers an opportunity to shift the yardstick, move the yardstick forward. We know the base of the NDP stands in solidarity with Palestinians. We also know that the leadership is afraid of the anti-Palestinian lobby, but there can be no excuses. And we all need to stand up for Palestinian rights. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first panelist, Hamam Farah. Hamam is a Palestinian Canadian activist, writer, psychotherapist by profession, and a board member of the Palestinian Canadian Community Center, Palestine House. Welcome, Hamam.
Thank you, Bianca. Let me start by saying that I am so excited to be here, and I'm honored to speak alongside some of the leading voices on the Canadian left on such a crucial issue of our time. In the wake of the International Criminal Court's war crimes investigation on Palestinian land, and the election of the most right-wing extremist pro-settler government in Israel's history, it's more urgent than ever for progressives, socialists, and leftists to stand in solidarity with Palestine. Unfortunately, we've known for many years that the NDP suffers from a problem we call progressive except Palestine, or the Palestine exception, where left-wing values of equality and justice are applied to every issue of injustice except for Palestine. We saw it play out blatantly and outrageously under Thomas Mulcair, summed up in his own words, and I quote, "I am an ardent supporter of Israel in all situations and in all circumstances," unquote. And now we see it play out, perhaps a little less blatantly, under Jagmeet Singh's centrist leadership. At the 2018 Federal Party Convention, I was there when the vote to prioritize the Palestine resolution took place. The room was packed at 7 a.m. by party establishment members and those close to the leadership, just so they could vote down a modest resolution which reiterated existing NDP policy on Israel-Palestine with the addition of a settlement boycott. A lot has happened since then. In the past several months, we've seen how Palestinians in the occupied territories were excluded from Israel's vaccination program. We've seen how Charlie Angus was threatened with the repugnant IHRA definition by Israel lobby organizations for rightfully calling Israel an apartheid state. Only 9 days later, the leading Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem, declared that Israel is a regime of apartheid. And just last month, the International Criminal Court finally opened its war crimes investigation. Meanwhile, Mr. Singh can't even recall that there is a Palestinian people when explicitly asked about Israel's treatment of the Palestinians by the CBC just this past Saturday. This is the context in which grassroots members of the NDP are saying enough is enough. At this year's federal convention, we're bringing two resolutions that would commit the party to taking a more principled stance. What I like about the two resolutions together is how they complement one another. One commits the NDP to taking meaningful action through targeted sanctions to hold Israel accountable, and the other defends our right to criticize Israel to begin with. These resolutions are the Palestine resolution and the resolution against the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. I know my fellow speakers will talk about the latter, so I'll leave that to them and address the former. The Palestine resolution is an updated version of the 2018 resolution. This time, it's more targeted and two-pronged. It commits the NDP to call for ending Canadian trade with illegal Israeli settlements, and it calls for an arms embargo between Canada and Israel until Palestinian rights are realized. The resolution makes it explicitly clear there is no legal or moral justification for the current status quo, whereby Canada encourages the violent and racist settlement project for Israel's military industry, or Israel's military industry. These policies are in line with international law and official Canadian policy even, which recognizes the illegality of Israeli settlements. So there should be no reason why this hasn't already happened to begin with. These policies are also the recommendations of the Canadian Labour Congress, Amnesty International, and Oxfam. Recently, the UN Human Rights Council urged all states to refrain from transferring arms to Israel because of the potential for human rights abuses. And the UN Special Rapporteur has called for a ban on settlement products. I'll now refer to a lesser known event that took place in January that we should pay close attention to. Palestinian factory workers in an illegal Israeli settlement went on strike. Among their demands were, quote, human-like conditions, unquote, holidays, pensions, and urging unions around the world to demand a boycott of Israeli settlements. After 19 days, the workers won their strike, at least until the agreement goes to the Israeli courts. But still, how is it possible that a group of Palestinian workers in an illegal Israeli settlement factory working in subhuman conditions on their own stolen land were able to win concessions from the factory owner? It's because the workers were aware that they were not alone. The tremendous support that they received from trade unions and individuals around the world gave them hope and made them resilient. Mohammed Bladi, the Secretary General of the Palestine New Federation of Trade Unions, commented on the agreement saying, "This is a victory for our striking workers. Achieving this success was anything but easy. To all of the trade unions and friends of Palestine who honestly stood in solidarity with the strikers, I say that this victory belongs to you too. By supporting the strike, you joined in the battle against oppression, racism, apartheid, and exploitation. We hope that this small victory is the beginning of other victories for our workers and our people that have been subjugated by Israel's inhumane apartheid and settler colonial oppression." If the NDP and the broader Canadian labor movement truly want to represent the interests of workers, of the oppressed, of the downtrodden, and of colonized peoples, they would do everything in their power to push for sanctions against Israel's illegal settlements and ban the arms trade, with an apartheid state being investigated for war crimes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Hamam. Our next speaker is Libby Davies. Libby was an MP for Vancouver East from 1997 to 2015. She was the former deputy leader and former house leader of the NDP. And she's the author of Outside In, a political memoir published in 2019. Welcome, Libby.
Hi, thank you so much, Bianca. And hello to everybody. I'm speaking to you today from the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish nations here in BC. I'm very, very happy to be joined with these wonderful panelists, all of whom I know. I should just let you know that I'm going to make some comments, but Bianca also asked me if I could provide a little bit of information about the process at the convention, as I'm sure there are people on the call who maybe would want to know that. So I will do that at the end of my remarks, Bianca. I really am happy to follow up from Haman, because I think you have laid out so clearly why we need to be passionately involved with this issue of Palestinian solidarity and human rights and upholding international law as Canadians. I want to focus my remarks today on what this means to the NDP, because I think that was what we were asked to speak about. And I think it's really important that we have that political discussion about the role of political parties and what we can do as grassroots members, as members, political activists of parties. I want to begin by saying that, you know, you'll hear from some people that those of us who have been working on these two resolutions, and I very much support both resolutions, the one that Haman spoke about and also about the settlements and the illegal goods, and also the no IHRA resolution. You'll hear from some people that those of us working on these resolutions are being used politically somehow as a wedge. We're being used as a wedge to divide the NDP and create controversy. I mean, let's just put it out there. That's what we're being partly charged with. And those folks are saying that these resolutions are somehow a distraction, and that they even undermine not only the convention, but the critical work we need to do in Canada as the NDP on things like stopping income inequality, or fighting for an expanded public healthcare system, and getting ready for a federal election, you know, whenever that might be, sooner or later. And I want to say, I put that out there because that's an argument that we're all hearing over and over. You guys are just a wedge. You're just, you know, this is a distraction that we don't need. And I want to say, I disagree. I disagree very firmly. Those who say that we should not be debating these issues are, in fact, the very same people who are trying to create a wedge deliberately. And I would say that if people were responding to this question that we're debating today of these resolutions from the basis of the values, the fundamental values and the history of our party in the NDP, and the respect and solidarity for human rights everywhere, then we should not, no one should be trying to shut down this needed and legitimate debate. You know, this is important. It's not a distraction. It's not about undermining. It's about actually honoring the values and the history that we have in our party. I would add this as well, that the principles of fighting anti-Semitism and fighting for pro-Palestinian human rights are one. They are not oppositional. They are often put to us as oppositional, that somehow you've got to choose. These are values. These two questions are related. They are not oppositional. And they are values at the NDP that we must stand up for. I think maybe some folks know that almost 50 riding associations across the country are supporting the no IHRA resolution, as well as the Young New Democrats and many prominent Canadian Jewish Palestinian voices and allies. And Haman has also outlined the other resolution that also has very, very strong support across the country. So both of these resolutions are very important. I do believe more and more people and groups are recognizing that now that the IHRA working definition is very unsound, it is profoundly wrong, and it is being used as an ideological weapon against the left by conservative pro-Israel elements. And let's be clear that it appears to be only the left and progressive groups that are being targeted by this campaign of misinformation, intimidation, and baseless accusations of anti-Semitism. I find that very interesting that it's become an ideological weapon that's being used against the left. So what is it that's really important right now? Well, we're days away from going into the NDP convention. And I think this is really the time for NDP members, the grassroots of the party who gather faithfully, loyally, with good faith, to affirm their right to debate and formulate rational policy decisions and positions. We cannot allow ourselves to be bullied into silence. We should be proud to continue the work against anti-Semitism, all forms of hatred, Islamophobia, racism, and work for the rights of Palestinians. As a party, the NDP should be bold and clear on this question. We should not shy away from it. This is who we are and who we need to be. The grassroots members of the NDP have an opportunity to demonstrate this in the coming days at the convention. So I feel like I want to appeal directly to delegates who are out there to say, this is your time to make sure that we affirm those rights, to speak out and to uphold the values of our party. Now, in terms of the convention, I'll just be very quick. The closing date for registration, Bianca, was today. It is today, I presume at the end of the day, April the 5th. And there begins what is called a prioritization process that begins on April the 7th, so on Wednesday, and it goes from 12:01 a.m. to 11:59 p.m., I presume on everybody's local time zone. And what we have been given the opportunity to go online, and you'll be given an easy code link to list or to rank in each of the sections, the seven sections that are resolutions are up for debate, to rank your top 10 resolutions. So this is quite a process because there's hundreds and hundreds of resolutions in the resolution book. And you can see those actually online at ndp.ca. If you go to Convention 2021, you can see the seven sections. The resolutions that we're speaking about are in section four, which is Canada's place in the world. And the resolution around the trade and settlements, illegal settlements, is resolution 041020. And the resolution around the no IRHA is 041120. And so we're really asking people to make sure that they use that process of the prioritizations to make sure that these resolutions are high on the priority list, to make sure that they do indeed get debated. Because I think many of us feel that if we can have that debate, the members of the NDP will vote in the affirmative for these resolutions. There's also a process for emergency resolutions. That closes at 4 p.m. on April the 9th, which I guess is Friday. And emergency resolutions will be debated on the last day. But needless to say, if you go on the NDP website, there is a whole section where you can go through, you know, questions. You can even send an email to ask questions. Because I know, you know, it being a virtual convention, it's going to be very different from conventions we've had in the past. And of course, we want to make sure that there is a good debate, that there's open debate, there's respectful debate, and we want to make sure that these two resolutions are on the priority high and that they will get debated and they will be supported. Thank you very much, Bianca.
Thank you. Thank you, Libby. Our next speaker is Sven Robinson. Sven was the NDP MP for ridings in the Vancouver suburb of Burnaby, British Columbia. Sven was the longest serving British Columbia MP of his time and served in Parliament from 1979 to 2004. Sven is the J.S. Woodsworth Resident Scholar at Simon Fraser University. Welcome, Sven.
Thank you very much, Bianca. And first, I want to join in the acknowledgement of the importance of recognizing that we come from the unceded territories of Indigenous peoples, including the Musqueam, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Squamish First Nations. It's an incredible honor for me to join with this panel. And I look at the other panelists, and what an amazing group of people who've been on the front lines of this struggle for many, many years. And so thank you. Thank you, Bianca, to CFPI and to all of the sponsors, to my friends at Rabble, for this opportunity. It is a precious opportunity on the eve of a historic convention. I want to make it very clear that, as Libby has said, I strongly support both of these key Palestine resolutions. And thank you, Hammam, for your eloquent statement explaining the importance of both of these resolutions. And I very much hope that the convention will adopt both of these resolutions. I want to talk about two or three key issues in the limited time I have. The first is that, for me, the most important issue, the most pressing issue now, is for the NDP to finally, for the first time, take a strong and clear and principled stand in support and in solidarity with the Palestinian people. I have witnessed firsthand the horrors of this occupation, the brutal, dehumanizing, violent, and illegal occupation. I was there during the Intifada in the 80s, and I'll never forget the woman who was pleading with the Israeli soldiers to let her young son go as one of the soldiers took his baton and smashed it on the arm of that young boy and broke his arm. I will never forget being at the checkpoints. At the checkpoints in 2001, after the siege at Jenin, and seeing the humiliation and the degradation that daily confronts the Palestinian people. Some of you remember I challenged the IDF at that time about the illegality of the occupation. And I commend to everyone the recent film, The Present, that so powerfully and movingly documents the impact on the daily lives of the Palestinian people as well. So that's what this is all about. This is about ending an occupation that is illegal, that is violent, that is in breach of United Nations resolutions and international law. And everything we do has to be focused on that and on solidarity with the Palestinian people. And yes, of course, on fighting anti-Semitism, on fighting all forms of hatred, as our resolution says. I also want to take a word about to say why it's particularly important that the NDP at this convention take a stand. And that is because, quite frankly, the history of the NDP is a history too often of silence. Silence and failure to stand up for the people of Palestine. And I've seen it under too many leaders. I myself was fired as a justice critic, as the foreign affairs Middle East critic, when I spoke out after returning from Jenin. Libby faced the humiliation of being attacked, unfortunately, and the tragedy of the then NDP leader phoning the Israeli ambassador to apologize. We've seen NDP candidates under the leadership of Tom Mulcair being blocked from running, including shamefully Paul Manley being blocked from running. And of course, under the present leadership, sadly, this trend has continued. I was grilled myself when I was vetted as a candidate, and Bob Ray's words were put to me about whether I, in fact, was prepared to stand up firmly and continue to stand against state terrorism of the Israelis and war crimes. In the most recent vetting process, just in the last couple of months, and I'm very sorry to say this, but NDP candidates, I know of one, at least one, who has been grilled about that candidate's opposition to the IHRA definition. This should not be happening. And Hammam has already made reference to the absolutely appalling silence of our leader during the interview on the House. So we have an opportunity, my friends, as NDP delegates, to say to our leadership and to our caucus that this has got to stop, that this silence must end, that we must stand in solidarity. And yes, New Democrat MPs have made a difference. I'm delighted that Peter Julian, that Alexander Boris, that Nikki Ashton have spoken out in support of our IHRA resolution. I know as well that Matthew Green has spoken in support of the other Palestine resolution. And we hope, of course, that he will do the same on the IHRA. We know that Jack Harris has taken a principled stand on the ICC, on annexation. Charlie Angus, as Imam mentioned, has spoken out on vaccination. But we have to, as a party, take a stand. And that's what these resolutions give us an opportunity to do. It's wonderful that almost 50 ridings have supported this, that Labour has supported this, that the Young New Democrats have taken a strong stand in support of this. But as Libby said, it's fundamentally about freedom of speech, and it's about our party having the right to debate this. A letter went out recently from some members of the NDP from the Jewish community saying that we should prevent this debate from taking place. Well, what happened to grassroots democracy? So I say, let's have the debate. I hope both resolutions will pass. Let's fight anti-Semitism in real terms, along with all other forms of hatred. The Jerusalem Declaration, for example, gives us a real opportunity to fight anti-Semitism. We also have an opportunity here, it seems to me, to take a stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people for the first time in the history of our party. This is not about an equal negotiation between two equal parties. It is about an oppressor and an oppressed. Just as that was the case in South Africa when we fought apartheid, so too must we stand in solidarity with the oppressed. And the NDP convention has a chance now to take that stand by supporting both of these resolutions, to stand up for freedom of speech, as academics across the country have demanded, including Jewish academics. And I deeply, deeply appeal to NDP delegates to take this stand, to prioritize these resolutions, and to ensure that we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people and for freedom of speech.
Thank you, Sven. Thank you so much. Thank you for just reminding us of the importance of grassroots democracy and also enlightening us to the difficulties that have been faced, just the marginalization and the silencing faced by those in the party who have stood up in defense of Palestinian people, and just for highlighting the need for the NDP to make a principled stand in defense of Palestinian self-determination. Our next speaker is Zahia El Masri. Zahia is of Palestinian descent and was born in Borj El Barajne refugee camp in Lebanon. She arrived in Cartierville with her parents when she was 11 years old. She's an activist and former NDP candidate for Ahuntsic Cartierville. Welcome, Zahia.
Thank you so much, Bianca, for having me. I am extremely honored to be on this panel with these most amazing people. I mean, I've seen firsthand your work in solidarity with the Palestinian human rights, and it just goes to show that this is something that we need to stand in solidarity together. I'd like to first begin by acknowledging that my presence in Tiatuyaki, Montreal, takes place on the unceded indigenous lands of the Kanyenkehá Mohawk Nation. Kanyenkehá is known as a gathering place for many First Nations, and we recognize the Kanyenkehá as custodians of the land and waters on which we gather today. Thank you for the Canadian Foreign Institute for organizing this event, of which we are in immense need to, and for all the other supporters as well. At a time when we are combating racism and hatred in all their forms, at a time when we say we stand with Standing Crop, we stand with the Wet'suwet'en Nation, when we all say aloud and in the streets, I can't breathe, at a time when our hearts bleed for Joyce Eshakwan, for her suffering and for her family and what they've been through. At a time when migrant workers that have helped to keep us fed here in Canada during the pandemic are dying from lack of access to healthcare. At a time like this, we should gather our forces to fight every kind of racism and hatred. As NDPers and as a member of the NDP, we should be the ones to enable the change that we speak about in our campaigns and not just speak as mere slogans. We should embody it in our actions. And today is the perfect opportunity to do so. My first convention at the NDP was in, I forgot the year, but was in Halifax. And I got this book, Why Sometimes David Win. And I recommend to everybody to read it. Because when he spoke to me, Marshall Gantz, and I told him that I was Palestinian, he said, this is our struggle. And he was talking about unions and the strikes and union strikes, he said, this is our struggle. Because when we say that we are fighting for social justice, it's not about excluding a cause. It's about being inclusive. It's not a buffet. You can't go choose and say, I'm going to defend this person's human rights and ignore the other person's human rights. If we as NDPers truly stand for social justice and human rights values, it means we are inclusive and we defend all of these. Today, it's a time for us as Palestinian Canadians where we find ourselves being silenced in fear and terrorized because our basic human rights and freedoms are under threat. But this time, it's not only us. This time, this is an attack on human rights groups and activists and the solidarity movement at large. Telling our story, the story of our ancestors, my story, with the key that you see right behind me. This is the key that my parents left with from Haifa, Palestine. If the IHRA definition, the new one, is adopted, I won't be able to tell the story of my ancestors. I won't be able to tell the story of the Nakba, the catastrophe that happened to the Palestinian people. I won't be able to tell the story of the dispossession of over 800,000 Palestinians from their villages. I won't be able to tell the story of Deir Yassin massacre. And these are all facts that happened on the ground. Even if it happens and we have the IHRA resolution, it won't change the reality on the ground that these happened, and we'll continue to speak up about these atrocities. Palestinians have been living under this kind of terror and oppression. I can just give you a couple of examples of the things we won't be able to say anymore because of the fear. I'm a board member of the Canadian Palestinian Foundation here in Quebec, and we see that students live in fear. Families are telling their children, don't participate in any more political events because they are being terrorized and in fear of being labeled anti-Semitic. We stand against all form of hatred, including hatred towards Palestinians, including anti-Semitism, including anti-Asian, we stand against all forms of hatred, but has to be inclusive of Palestinian human rights as well. One of the examples that I wanted to share with you that we won't be able to do anymore is basically when we have our regular events and we share the history of Palestine, we share the evolution of the map, we talk about the wall, we talk of the villages, we talk of the different artists that wanna showcase their history of Palestine. We won't be able to do that anymore. But these ongoing tactics intimidate activists for Palestinian human rights, they chill criticism of Israeli government practices, and they impair a fair-minded dialogue on the pressing question of Palestine rights. Like Libby mentioned, what we should be doing is encouraging people to have this dialogue. What this definition does is on the contrary. It suppresses dialogue and it's not taking us forward. This is what we should be focusing on. We don't want censorship. Just as we can criticize the Canadian government, just as we can criticize the Saudi Arabian government, just as we can criticize any other government's policies, we should be able to criticize the Israeli government's policy. This is what's at the heart of the issue. We are all in this fight together against all forms of hatred, discrimination, and racism, including Palestinian human rights. And this is what we should focus on. We should be telling the story of what's happening on the ground to Palestinians. These are the facts: forcible transfer of Palestinians to make way for illegal Israeli settlements, preventing Palestinians from returning to their homes on lands, systematic and severe deprivation of fundamental human rights of Palestinians based on their identity. And this didn't happen overnight. We've had numerous laws passed for people who support, activists who support the boycott campaign. It's been an ongoing issue. And we know what happened with the organization Rights and Democracy here in Canada. This is not in the US, under Harper. We know how they were silenced. So these silencing techniques have just been escalating. And it's up to us as NDPers, as activists, to take a stand today. This is our chance. Every voice matters. We've all said it and we will repeat it. Every voice matters. I just want to encourage everybody to take a stand for human rights and for Palestinian human rights and for a dialogue for us to be able to speak in order to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Zahia. Thank you for your passionate appeal and your reminder for us to use our voices and to fight all forms of hatred and racism, including defending the fundamental rights of Palestinians. The final speaker of the evening is Rabbi David Miviser. Rabbi David Miviser retired after serving synagogues in Vancouver for 20 years and has lived in Israel for 4 years at different times in his life. He's been involved deeply and personally with Israel and Palestine for 50 years. Two of his adult children are Israeli citizens and have lived in Israel for years. David is an advocate for justice, freedom, and equality for Palestinians and an active member of Independent Jewish Voices in Canada and of Jewish Voice for Peace in the US, as well as an active member of the NDP and will be a delegate to the NDP convention from Hamilton Center. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate being able to be here with you. And I really appreciate absolutely the passion and the depth with which everyone else has spoken, especially Zahia, to follow you right now is pretty amazing. And I'm also quite conscious that in my introduction, we just said, I lived in Jerusalem for 3 years. I lived in Tiberias, Tabaria, for a year. My older daughter is in Yafo right now. My son lived there for years. And I imagine you've never been there. And you've never lived there. You can't go there. And yet you're from there. And actually, I'm not. And I could, right now, I could go to the airport, get on a plane, fly there and stay there the rest of my life, be welcomed with open arms. I could be given government subsidies to buy a house, possibly, well, not in Haifa, but in the West Bank, literally be given government subsidies and be encouraged to do that. And part of the financial picture, actually, is charitable donations from people here in Canada going to support settlers living there on the land, you know, I imagine maybe not your family, but perhaps your cousins or others were driven right off of. So just to speak here with you and after you, it's an honor and I feel, you know, very grateful that I'm able to do that. I don't want to take too long. So many points have been made already, but let me, like others, acknowledge where I'm speaking from. You mentioned I'm going to be a delegate from Hamilton Center. I moved here just a couple years ago, and I learned that this is the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee people, something I was shocked to learn as we talk about self-determination of nations, is that as recently as less than 100 years ago, after the First World War, when the League of Nations was determining the right of self-determination, the Haudenosaunees from right here in Ontario sent a delegation to the League of Nations to be recognized as a nation with the right of self-determination, and the United Kingdom, the United States, and Canada stopped it. So Canada does have quite a long history of denying the right of self-determination of many, many, many nations. And anyone who lives in British Columbia can just look around and see that that's still going on today. And also when I moved here first time, I heard about the dish with one spoon treaty. I was like, I didn't know what that is. The dish with one spoon is the idea that we all live kind of like in one big dish. There's a lot of resources here for us to eat from. And there's one spoon, and we all have to share it. So that's where I'm speaking from in a very physical way. That's where I'm sitting today in Hamilton, Ontario. But anyway, the topic is the importance of the NDP convention. And what I want to say kind of directly is that the NDP right now is the only party in Canada that would even consider the possibility of taking a moral stand on Palestine. The Conservatives, as we saw under Stephen Harper, went just the opposite direction. They had policies that were actually beyond what Bibi Netanyahu did. The Liberal Party, I think, is completely sold out and basically owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Zionist lobby in Canada. And the Green Party, unfortunately, just made a choice to reject a leader who would have led it to take a moral stand on Palestine, and instead chose someone who I think is extremely compromised. So any of us in Canada who want a party to bring this topic into the national discourse so that it can even get a platform and be heard, our choice is the NDP. And then what's up with the NDP? I've been watching the chat on the screen here, and people are saying, well, why did Jagmeet Singh like avoid this topic? What is going on here? What's the matter, you know? So why is the NDP so influenced by the Zionist lobby in Canada, the Israel lobby in Canada? There's a name for that thing. It's called CEJA, but it doesn't reflect the rank and file or the membership of the NDP. We have almost 350 people on this call, and CEJA is trying right now to even get this resolution that Sven and Libby initiated just kicked out of the convention. That's what they're used to doing. We've already heard they did that in 2018, despite the fact that in 2018, something like two dozen writing associations passed it. It never got discussed. So that's not going to happen this time. We're going to vote for it. I expect it will be prioritized, but we'll see. Anyway, I just want to move on and talk a little bit about CEJA. CEJA is the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. It purports to speak for Canadian Jews, and I'll acknowledge it. It does speak for a certain band on the spectrum of Canadian Jews. We have a lot of different opinions among ourselves. The organization that I'm most active with, called Independent Jewish Voices, together with another Jewish organization called the United Jewish People's Order, in 2018 commissioned a survey, a study by a completely professional survey organization called ECOS. And they just surveyed Jews in Canada. And their survey showed that 37% of the Jews in Canada have a negative evaluation of the Israeli government. I just want to repeat that. 37% of the Jews in Canada negatively relate to the Israeli government. 30% of the Jews in Canada think that the Palestinian civil society request for BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions is justified. And 34% of the Jews in Canada think that the Canadian government's attempts to stifle that is wrong. We have a prime minister who very proudly said that BDS has no place in Canada, and the IHRA is a fraudulent attempt to claim that somehow that that's anti-Semitic. I think it's anti-Semitic for anybody to claim to speak for 37% of Canadian Jews and misrepresent us. So I feel like I'm kind of out of time here. I don't know how much longer I could, you know, I could talk like this for hours, but I just want to repeat my few points. One, the NDP is extremely important. It's the only party in Canada where you can even talk about this stuff. And the NDP, I think, is starting to open up and become more democratic. I hope it will. We'll find that out by the end of this weekend. The people pushing this lie, this fraudulent attempt to mislead the rest of this country, that they somehow speak for the Jews of Canada, cannot get away with that any longer. We're going to call them out and we'll say the truth. And you can even go, if you want, to the website of Independent Jewish Voices, look for the report on this survey, and that'll help you make the same argument that they don't speak for us. And I'll just leave it there. I look forward to questions and discussion. And I just really thank all the organizations that brought this together and thank every single person that's here listening. It's so important. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you. Thank you for your passionate appeal and for sharing your perspective. So we are now moving on to the next part of the evening. We're in the Q&A period. The first questions For tonight's info session, we'll be walking us through why some find the IHRA definition a problem in terms of blocking criticism of Israel for state actions. I'm one of the delegates. From my writing, it seems to me that using the IHRA definition in all actual fact can't stop us as a party or government from criticizing Israel. David.
So I've read in the chat some people saying like, oh, well, it's not legally binding. And, you know, if they pass it into law, it will be challenged constitutionally. So I want to say that there is a huge chilling effect, as I believe Zahia said, as I know Hammam personally experienced, and I've experienced myself, whereby there's a kind of a dominant attitude that if you stand up clearly for Palestinian rights, it's made to look like somehow you're anti-Jewish, and that's not okay. You can lose your job, you can be denied grants, you can be kept off of panels, you can be kind of quietly kept out of certain places. It doesn't have to be legally binding to have that kind of effect. So anyone who makes the argument, which is a defensive, apologetic, fraudulent argument that this won't be used against anybody that criticizes Israel, they either don't know what they're talking about or they're intentionally trying to mislead you. The whole entire purpose of the IHRA, the reason it was created, the reason it was fabricated, was to brand anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. It was created after the Durban Conference in South Africa by people who were upset about the declaration that Zionism is racism, and they wanted to stop that. The main one I know about is Erwin Kotler, former Minister of Justice in Canada. I think he's the main mover behind this. I think it's like a big lie technique where they came up with a plausible lie and just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So the reason for the IHRA is to silence talk about Palestine. It's not a flaw. It's not an accident. That's why it was created.
Yes, sorry, just a couple of points I wanted to add. I mean, I think one of the most serious questions is the definition in and of itself, the wording of the definition, and we don't have time to get into this, but the definition in and of itself is relatively benign. What the danger, though, is in what they call the examples, and there are 11 examples. Seven of those examples deal directly with Israel and criticism of the policies of the government of Israel. Is this hypothetical? It's real. In fact, one of the key authors of the IHRA definition, Kenneth Stern, respected Jewish academic, one of the authors, has warned against the weaponization of this definition. The definition has already been used to attack New Democrat members of parliament. When Charlie Angus and another NDP member of parliament, for example, spoke out about the denial of vaccines for Palestinians in the occupied territories, conservative MPP in Ontario said this is a breach of the IHRA definition. The Israeli, one of the top Israeli diplomats in Ottawa, attacked Charlie, saying that this is a breach of the IHRA definition. Over 150 Jewish academics have said that this is a serious threat to academic freedom and freedom of speech as well. So it is already silencing people. I want to say one other thing as well, and David spoke very eloquently about the way that anti-Semitism is used to shut down debate. It's also being used as a weapon against the left more generally. And let's recognize and call that out for what it is. The fact that Jeremy Corbyn, for example, has been as anti-Semitic, and in fact, he's fought racism and hatred all his life, it's not because of that. It's because he's a left-winger, he's a socialist.
Exactly.
And it was shameful that when Nikki Ashton actually hosted an event with Jeremy Corbyn, that my party raised questions about that, an event for Progressive International. So let's be clear. This is not anti-Semitism. We fight anti-Semitism. We fight hatred. But what it is about is weaponizing and silencing those who would speak in solidarity with the Palestinian people. It has been used and it will be used again. And the last point I want to make is that there's legislation coming up in the House on online hatred and CEJA. David referred to CEJA. CEJA is already pushing all parliamentarians to include the IHRA definition in this framework of legislation. The NDP, what stand will we take? The NDP justice critic is Randall Garrison. He says he supports the IHRA definition. Well, my friends, I hope that the membership of our party at our convention will send a very clear message that this is not acceptable, that we do not accept this definition being used to weaponize and silence voices of solidarity.
Bianca, if I may add one more thing
regarding. Yes, please go ahead, Zoya.
Extremely important, but I want to mention the example seven, because like David and Sven said, it's not the definition itself. In fact, many Jewish-based groups, they say that the definition itself, it's very weird, like it's not clear at all. You know, there are much better definitions that are out there that can be used. However, example seven, because there was a question, how is it that I won't be able to talk about Nakba anymore, our own catastrophe? Example seven in the definition says, denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination by claiming that the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor. And there's another example where it says there's a way where you can't criticize the policies of the state of Israel because then you'll be criticizing the Jewish people as a whole. Now, these two examples are extremely problematic because if I am going to talk about our own dispossession, our own Nakba, the overall aura, the overall intent of this resolution is to silence me because people will be afraid to listen to even what I have to say in the fear of being labeled anti-Semitic, because it is a real horrific charge to be labeled anti-Semitic, rightfully so, and we should be combating that. However, this definition, the intent that it is coming out with is to conflate the criticism of the state of Israel and its policies with being anti-Semitic. So by me mentioning Nakba, mentioning the racist laws that Israel is implementing on Palestinians, I will be labeled anti-Semitic and I won't be able to speak it if we follow this definition. And therefore, this is why we say it will impede any dialogue. And we need this dialogue more than ever today.
I think the problem that we're really facing is that the IHRA definition has now become a general narrative, right? I mean, even people in the chat are saying, well, what does the definition say? What are these 11 examples? Well, most people are not going to, have the time to go and look it all up and sort of examine what they think is relevant or not. The problem is it's now become very politically mainstream. It's being used in the political world by politicians who want to shut down debate. And I think that's to me, it's sort of like a new kind of McCarthyism, right? Where you brand people. And we saw that, you know, in the 1950s. And that's what's taking place here. And it's very, very dangerous.
And just a quick word too, the Independent Jewish Voices website has a very, very powerful and comprehensive background on the IHRA definition that I would encourage everybody to look at. And just as well, I think I want to come back to Hamam's opening statement because, and David touched on this, because while it's incredibly important that we do everything we can to support the resolution, the IHRA, it's also important to support the resolution that calls for concrete steps to be taken by Canada. Economic pressure, banning settlement products, ban on military sales, as a basic step in solidarity with the Palestinian people. I think it's really important that we do both and we acknowledge the importance of both of these important steps as we move forward.
It's been a terrific night, and that's it for our program today. Thank you all.
Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
So that's it for us for today. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
this frequency. We're going to call you CKUP throughout this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and look like you pick up CKUP, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUP is on the air.
Got that sass, rich chick, but she don't pay tax. Fake lips, but she don't got class. Fake hitters, they don't get no pass. Talk big, but he just blow gas. Toxic, free Brit, but you not that hip. Goody running with the mob, but you just not get. Busy wrapping up a slob, yo, I see you, pig. Not a second glance, not a second chance. Oh, yeah, with your man's, he afraid to speak. Watch chick, keep it lit, yeah, we duck the meat. Cheat code on the road, hit the what you think. It take a real king, gonna try and cuff the queen. It take a real bad chick to try and thug with me. Why it always a bum that's in love with me?